Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have this on the line, Mr. Jack Thompson. He's written a fascinating book, Out of Harm's Way, and it's the story of one man's effort. And sometimes people say, well, I'm just one person, what can I do? I can't do anything at all. Well, Jack set out many years ago to do something and have an impact on what was going on in the world, and he really has, and he's written a wonderful book, and you'll learn a lot from it, and what one man with God's help can accomplish. Jack, thank you so very much for being with us again.
Hey, great to be with you. Happy New Year.
And you too.
Well, thank you.
Why don't you, for our listeners who do not know who you are, why don't you introduce yourself, and then we'll take off and let you tell the story.
Well, if they don't know who I am, congratulations. It's knowing me is not always an easy thing. I guess particularly though, if you're a pornographer and if you're distributing adult entertainment to kids. I'm a lawyer. I happen to be a Christian. I'm a husband, and we're parents of a 13-year-old boy. And he, of course, by virtue of his age, lives in a youth culture that is completely foreign to what I grew up in when my parents raised me in the 50s and 60s in rural Ohio. I graduated from Vanderbilt Law School in 1976, had the unfortunate experience of being in that class with Al Gore. That's another interview. and we can talk about that sometime. But in 1987, as sort of a libertarian, I would guess, and a conservative Republican who thought that the First Amendment protected everything that you can say and do in this society, I heard a male homosexual pedophile on a commercial radio station in Miami soliciting teenage boys for sex on the air. And the station was running a promotional contest in which if he found someone to his liking, the station would pay for him and the teenager to take a trip together to Hawaii. I'm not making this stuff up. And
you thought that maybe was just a little bit beyond the bounds.
It kind of, Mayor Koch of New York, formerly of New York, said a conservative is a liberal who's been mugged by reality. I was a libertarian who was mugged by the reality that that was shock radio, and that's how far things had gone back then. And a minister of mine has often said that thirst presupposes there's water somewhere. And I knew in the blink of an eye that, number one, the First Amendment can't protect that, and number two, there had to be a law somewhere to do something about it. And in fact, I went to the library, and I found the cases that they never taught us in law school, and they were the cases specifically FCC versus Pacifica that holds that the Congress has the right to prohibit the airing of the indecent material on the public airwaves. And I pursued that. I got the first decency fines then ever levied by the FCC against that station, and I was off and running in the culture war that has continued my efforts in that for 18 years.
Well, I think, of course, you've done a wonderful job, and you've been on the front lines of this battle, and you've taken on some of the biggest names in radio, and you've made a difference. And I think that, if nothing else, we can learn that if we dedicate ourselves to it, and with God's help, we can accomplish great and amazing things. So we're going to be back here in just a moment with Mr. Jack Thompson talking about his book, Out of Harm's Way. A fascinating read, I can promise you. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Jack Thompson, who is a practicing lawyer But he has had a fascinating experience. He's been on the front lines of the battle, really trying to combat pornography on the airwaves. And not only that, but the impact of some of the video games our children play. And people say, oh, they're only games. But as you'll see as we develop this evening's program, these programs have a lot more influence than the average person really thinks about. But the problem we have today is we have total indecency on the airwaves, both in radio and in television, things which, even 10 years ago, would have shocked people. But it's getting worse and worse, and it will continue until the good people do something. And Mr. Thompson's out there in the front line. So he was simply telling us that it was back, I guess, was it 19? When did you first get started in this?
1987,
when he got some fines lodged against a radio station that was actually airing a homosexual who was trying to get an underage boy. He was trying to
Teenage boys. He evidenced an interest in, and it wasn't just that. The FCC looked at the incredible sexual material other than that he was airing, and talk about a God not wasting relationships. Al Gore sat on the FCC Oversight Committee in the Senate that was so appalled when they heard Gary Bauer testify that indeed what I had heard was what I heard, that they went to the FCC and said, we've got to do something, we've got to find this station, and that's how that came about. I've moved on to other things. I was a friend of the court. It's called amicus curiae in the federal obscenity trial that some of your listeners may remember, that occurred in South Florida, and it was over the rap group Two Live Crews, As Nasty As They Want to Be. And this was an incredibly sexual album that was being marketed to children and sold to children. And a Jimmy Carter appointed civil rights oriented federal judge by the name of Jose A. Gonzalez was given that case, and after a full blown trial entered a 62-page opinion and found for the first time in history that a sound recording, that particular album, was obscene. So that took me to the Ice-T, the rapper Ice-T's song Cop Killer, and I had the privilege 2 years later in 1992 of addressing the Time Warner shareholders board about that, and despite the promises of Time Warner that they would, quote, stand behind their artists.
Hold that right there, just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Mr. Jack Thompson. He's telling about some of the things he did, and some of the times he would simply try to shine light on what these deceitful people are doing, and he was just telling us that Ice-T had actually come up with an album. And what was the rest of that story?
Sure. The album was called Body Count. On that album was a song called Cop Killer, in which Ice-T, who now plays a cop on Law and Order Special Victims Unit on NBC, don't you love that, was advocating killing police officers everywhere in the United States. And Ollie North asked me, because of the success in the Two Live Crew case, to represent his Freedom Alliance at the Time Warner shareholders meeting, and it was quite a brouhaha. Police groups were calling for a boycott of Time Warner. Charlton Heston, though, really won the day when he addressed the Time Warner shareholders meeting and convinced, despite the promises that they would always stand behind their artists and they would never pull an album and never bow to pressure, they pulled that album off store shelves across the globe and reconfigured the album without that song on it. So there was an example where words had force, and Charlton Heston gave, and it's recounted in the book Out of Harm's Way. I'm getting goosebumps, frankly, thinking about it, what it was like to be there. It was the greatest speech I've ever heard firsthand and witnessed. And in many ways, it lit the fuse on the culture war, because it was an example of a person in the entertainment industry basically saying to that entertainment giant, still the largest communications company in the world, you should be ashamed of yourself. And in fact, let me quote Colin Powell in his My American Journey, his great autobiography. He said, I think appropriately, that shame is not a bad moral compass. and that sometimes shame can bring us to our senses. And he recounts how his mother brought him up short oftentimes by saying, "You've brought shame to our family, you shouldn't have done that," and so forth. And he's pointed out what I think is largely true, and that is America has lost its sense of shame. And it's shame when we see and bring up a light upon what the entertainment industry is doing. You can shame people into doing the right thing simply because they're embarrassed. And that's what I've been involved in. But let me say quickly, it's not my standard that I'm trying to impose. As a lawyer, in all of these fights I've been in, whether it's rap music or shock radio or now the violent video games that are literally training kids to kill, I have, as a lawyer, said, look, here's what's being done. Here's what the law is. What do you, either Congress or a judge or a city council, what do you think is the truth as to whether or not the law is being violated? And the great thing about this still free country is that the First Amendment says this: the right of the people to petition the government for a redress of grievances shall not be abridged. And what that means is not that you have a right to solicit kids for sex on the air, and not that you have a right to distribute porn in movies and in books to kids, but you have a right to say, enforce the laws to the government and pass laws if we don't have them, and get those enforced. And that's what the First Amendment is really about. It's about the right of the people to use the government to protect us and our kids from predatory practices.
And of course, that's the thing, is that actually you went after Howard Stern. I mean, right. Howard Stern was just totally obscene, and they call him a shock jock. The whole idea was you push the envelope as far as you can, just really infuriate moral people, and of course there are depraved people out there who will actually laugh at Howard Stern. This man, because of Mr. Thompson and Mr. Thompson getting him off of the radio, as actually now he's got a contract for $500 million for 5 years, $500 million, $100 million a year, and they're going to try, of course, to bring this on satellite, which is not under FCC. But let's get into the background of how you were able to get him actually off of talk radio and to stop polluting the airwaves.
Yeah, it's what you've said there is a shorthand version of what happened, and you're correct. Stern, by the way, on the cover of the book, Out of Harm's Way, it has this lovely quotation that I think is great. He said, quote, and this is on the cover, "This lunatic lawyer in Miami got me off the air," close quote. Well, I like to point out, if I'm a lunatic, what does that say about his lawyers? They didn't do a very good job keeping him on the air. And what happened was, in February of 2004, and this was just a month after the, quote, wardrobe malfunction at the Super Bowl with Janet Jackson, which I point out in the book was fully orchestrated and planned by the people at MTV who choreographed the halftime show. They announced a year ahead of time that something like this was going to happen. Stern aired an interview, did a live interview with the guy who had relations, so to speak, with Paris Hilton, and who then tastefully decided to put that, shall we say, interlude between him and Paris on the internet. And you, of course, Stern knew what kind of interview this was going to be, and he aired a comment that I'm not going to repeat or even describe, except to say that it was racist, and it was also incredibly grotesque in its misogyny, its objectifying of women. And he put the racist and the misogyny together in one comment that was absolutely like putting a match to gasoline. I got the transcript of it to clear channel. Within an hour or so, Stern was off the air on, quote, probation. The FCC, with whom I have worked directly, processed that complaint. They went back into the archives, pulled out a complaint I had filed a year ago, prior to that is, and within 2 months levied $500,000 fine against Clear Channel. Clear Channel took Stern off their stations around the country permanently. He was still on Infinity stations. But then I was part of a consent decree that was entered into months later in November of 2004 in a $3.5 million judgment in which Viacom Infinity, which syndicated Stern, agreed to rein him in, to stop his airing of indecent material, one of my complaints was part of that consent decree. And Stern then said, I've had enough. I'm off terrestrial radio. I can't handle it anymore. I can't do my radio show anymore. And he's gone. And I think that's a good thing.
And I think it's a good thing, too. And certainly I hope that they go bankrupt. I'm trying to get him get people to pay $100 million a year to hear the filth that he puts out. But it was really you're filing these charges. And that's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. We have a great deal of power. We can do things. That we saw this during the Christmas season when Donald Wildman, who runs the American Family Association, brought pressure to bear on Target stores and on Walmart and certainly on Walgreens and a number of the major chains. And believe me, most of them backed down to their anti-Christian bigotry. And actually, I said, gee, we had no idea what we were doing. Shucks. We never would have wanted anybody to think that we were trying to take the Christ out of Christmas, and we won't do it again. Well, whether they will or not, Don Wildman did that. But you've done even something more amazing.
Well, let me just say, though, Don Wildman is a great man. And I met him in the White House in 1988 when I was a fledgling culture warrior, and I was thrilled. I was there with Phyllis Schlafly and with Alan and Donald Wildman of the American Family Association, because we were there to meet the president. He decided, the president did, to invade Honduras that day, so we didn't get to meet him, but we met Gary Bauer instead, which proved to be useful in the solving of the shock radio problem. God knew that I was to meet Gary and not Ronald Reagan that day. But Don Wildman said something very important that night when we all got together after being at the White House. He said at our dinner, you know, we may not win all these fights, but doggone it, after we're done, these bad guys will know that we have been around kicking them in the tail. And I think sometimes that's all you have to do. In Ephesians it says, in effect, take a stand. And I must tell you, as a Christian who happens to be a lawyer of only middling ability, believe me, my wife who's a lawyer can tell you that, my enemies can tell you that, and I'll tell you that right now. The fact is that if you make yourself available, despite your abilities or lack thereof, but just have a will to want to do something, then you will be used, and you can get things done. And it's amazing what saying no to people who intend to do evil can do to get them to stop. It's gratifying, because sometimes Edmund Burke said, all that's necessary for evil to triumph is for good men to do nothing. And the obverse of that is for good to triumph, you just need to sometimes do something.
And I really think it's so important for our listeners to understand there really are evil people in the world. They really want to do evil things. They want to corrupt the hearts and the minds and the souls of our children. They want to prevent any mention of God in our schools, and that has nothing to do with the Constitution, haven't you? You go to the Supreme Court building, you walk up the stairs, you look up at the top of the apex of the building there, and the marble that's engraved there, and there's Moses, you know, with having the Ten Commandments, one in either hand, and you walk into the room where the Ten Commandments meets, the Supreme Court meets, and there, engraved on the wood of the door, are the replicas of the Ten Commandments, and the marble up above where they sit. They've got a replica of the Ten Commandments. I mean, these Supreme Court justices knew what they were doing when they took God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. They wanted to destroy the Christian foundation of this country, and what we've got to do is let people understand these things are not happening. They're happening because the good people are doing nothing. And Jack Thompson and his book, of course, describes what he's done. It's amazing what one individual can do. And I hope he'll be an inspiration for every one of you out there in the listening audience. The book, Out of Harm's Way, and One Man's Relentless Crusade to Topple Media Giants and Save Your Kids from Video Game Madness. And we're going to be back in just a minute or two to talk about what they're doing with the video games. The military uses video games to teach people how to kill. And they train their soldiers with those video games. And then they use exactly those same video games on your children. We're going to be back in just a moment with Jack Thompson exploring the incredible things that are happening and his crusade, and you should be helping him. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Mr. Jack Thompson. We're talking about this next step was to try to do something about video games. So why should we be concerned about video games?
Well, video games are unique among all entertainment modalities in that they are interactive in nature. You can watch a violent movie, and you're doing so passively, and you can be revulsed by it, you can be neutral about it, but if you play a video game, and if it's a Grand Theft Auto game, for example, you must engage in the violence in a virtual setting and thereby accede to it, enter into it, and become a violent perpetrator. The Grand Theft Auto games also are not just violent. They convey a sociopathic message, which you become the actuator of. You have sex with prostitutes and you kill them to get your money back. You burn the flesh off police and hear them scream as their flesh burns. In fact, the major strategy in the Grand Theft Auto games, which are the most violent and sadly the most successful of all the violent games, 60 million units of these games have been sold around the world. A Gallup poll found that 71% of all teenage American boys have played just one of these Grand Theft Auto games, Grand Theft Auto Vice City, and that of those who had played it, they were twice as likely to have been engaged in an act of violence as those who had not played that one Grand Theft Auto game. These are games which are not just violent, but convey a sociopathic message, and that is to be the bad guy is to be the hero. And to engage in crime is the way you win the game. And that's why we're seeing increasingly law enforcement finding that kids are acting out, copycatting these particular games in engaging in crime. Jeffrey Weiss, I could give you 3 hours of examples, but I'll give you one right now. Jeffrey Weiss, a Native American in Red Lake, Minnesota, in April of 2005, went on a shooting rampage, the worst school massacre since Columbine. He killed 10. And they found that he was a devotee of the Grand Theft Auto Vice City game. He had uploaded to the internet what's called a flash film amateur version of the game that he was enamored of. And the FBI special agent in charge, whom I talked to, said, Mr. Thompson, it was clear that Jeffrey Weiss had rehearsed this killing because he was stalking his prey. We could see him on the surveillance cameras, and it was clear by his movements that his heart rate was not above 65 minutes beats per minute, and this indicated someone who had rehearsed and rehearsed and had rehearsed again what he was to do that day. And the way he did it was to train on a murder simulator, Grand Theft Auto, that got his heart rate down and trained him to shoot his prey, human prey, in the head, and to shoot him in other ways that he learned from the game. So if you even leave aside the appetite to kill as not being engendered and exacerbated by the games, which all the evidence indicates it was, the games at the very least give killing methods and scenarios to individuals who shouldn't have them. And that's why the military, as you pointed out, is literally contracting with the video game industry to create and make killing simulators to do two things, really, to teach killing skills, but also, very importantly, to break down the inhibition to kill, or in other words, to desensitize a new recruit to the act of killing, because if mom and dad turn over little Johnny to the military, he's not a sociopath, and he's not prepared to kill another human being because he's...
Hold that thought right there, please.
Yeah.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Jack Thompson. His book is out of harm's way. And we were simply discussing this whole idea of interactive video games and the fact that the military knows that when your son or your daughter joins the military, they're not prepared to kill other people. This is totally abhorrent to the average individual. In fact, the hardest thing that military has is to get people who have a Christian background to be willingly and intentionally kill others. So they have developed video games. They paid a great deal of money for these video games to be developed. Interactive video games. It's different than just a video game. It's an interactive. You become part of it. And they use the video games to train young recruits to be totally heartless, to be totally dedicated to simply killing other human beings. But what is so incredible is that then these exactly the same games are being sold to your children. And as Mr. Thompson points out, 60 million copies of Grand Theft Auto, and apparently it comes in various subdivisions, but Grand Theft Auto, a program, an interactive video program that will teach you how to kill, to enjoy killing, how to do it, the techniques, where do you kill the people, how you kill the police officers. You pick the story up there, Jack.
Well, and the fact that the military uses these games to do just that, it basically cuts the legs off any argument that the video game industry has that it doesn't have that desensitizing effect on kids that are civilians, because it has that effect on kids that are new recruits and are wearing uniforms. We have a case in which I'm involved in Alabama, in which was featured on 60 Minutes and also reported on favorably in Reader's Digest, in which a teenager literally trained to kill two cops and a dispatcher by playing the Grand Theft Auto Vice City game, in which he replicated or rehearsed the precise scenario that Ed Bradley showed he acted out in the police station in Fayette, Alabama. He stole an empty car. He was taken in. He grabbed a gun out of the holster of the officer, shot him, another officer, and a dispatcher in the head, and then fled in a police car, exactly what you do in the game. And we have experts who've executed affidavits. Three of the four have testified before Congress on this issue, and they've said that but for the video game training that the industry gave this teenager, he would not have done what he did. And indeed, and that's not to say the perpetrator isn't responsible for what he did criminally. This kid is on death row to be executed. This young man, he was 2 weeks past his 18th birthday. If he'd been 2 weeks younger, he could not, under now the law, be executed. But what we're saying is the industry basically equipped him to do what he did, as surely as if they had handed him a gun and said, have fun.
Has anybody talked to him? What is his response? What is his explanation for what he did?
He really doesn't have an explanation, and in fact, on the face of it, he can't have one, because it makes no sense. He had no history of violence. He had no history of criminal activity. He had committed an offense that was probably going to get him probation, stealing a car, given his lack of criminal record, and instead he shoots three police personnel, six capital murder counts, and he's scheduled to die by lethal injection. His life is over. And what he did was nonsensical. It makes, you can understand someone laying in wait and planning to kill somebody, and that's first-degree murder. But even the prosecutor said to me, I don't think he went into that police station with any intent to hurt anybody. But there's a great book out called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell, a best-selling author, who also wrote The Tipping Point, in which he points out that the brain can basically be trained through things like video games to make split-second, nanosecond decisions that can be either brilliant or catastrophic. And that's the problem with the video games. They basically can give a child, even, a cranial menu that in a moment of stress will pop up and you will act out that menu that you've been trained to act out.
And I really think that this is exactly what it is. You're actually, first of all, you're desensitizing that child to killing. And
exactly.
Then, of course, you're conditioning them so you get a conditioned reflex. And certainly,
and that's why the military uses them, because they want you to make that split-second decision in a combat setting. Unfortunately, you have civilians making the same split-second catastrophic decision.
But, of course, you use the same trainings, it's exactly the same film and the same sequences,
same game,
on our kids, that they use on the military. How do you justify this? How do you explain it? Well, when we get back here, why, of course, you're going to welcome your calls back at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I mean, do the parents understand what's happening? Do the people even selling these games understand what's happening? Are we responsible for what we do? Are we responsible for what we don't do? I believe men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest is Mr. Jack Thompson. We're talking about video games. And now, what actually is going to happen as far as the video games are concerned? Are you going to be able to hold the people who produce this? Who actually, is this a Sony game? Who put this one out?
Well, the maker of it is the Grand Theft Auto games. Is Take-Two. Their subsidiary, Rockstar, made all the Grand Theft Auto games. They've released them on both the Sony PlayStation 2 and the Xbox, which is a Microsoft platform. So everybody in the video game industry is culpable that has been involved in these games, including those two giants, Microsoft and Sony. What we hope to do is hold accountable those who put this adult game and marketed it. See, that's the issue. The issue isn't can adults buy adult games. The fact is that the industry has acknowledged that these are inappropriate for minors by virtue of the neurobiological propensity or vulnerability of kids to the copycatting phenomenon, and yet they have marketed the dickens out of these games to minors, and the retailers such as Best Buy, Target, Walmart, Circuit City, GameStop, Amazon.com, and so forth are nevertheless selling these adult games to minors. There are no laws anywhere that prohibit this. And yet after Columbine, the Federal Trade Commission found that this was basically deception on a wholesale setting by the video game industry and the retail industry in continuing to market and sell these adult, violent, sex-contented games to kids. And so we're hoping to hold them accountable with monetary damages. I think laws need to be passed, because in the UK and Australia, New Zealand, you cannot sell legally these mature-rated games and adult games to kids. But in this country, the land of the free, uninformed by morality and by virtue, we are selling these adult games to kids in the name of freedom.
Well, no, because we can keep children from buying alcohol. We can keep children from buying tobacco.
And by the way, firearms also.
Right. But the videos now, has there been any effort to get legislation enacted so that something could be done?
Yes, I'm working with legislators in a number of states. Unfortunately, Hillary Clinton, who's grabbed this issue, is engaged in what Dick Morris calls triangulation. She's saying she wants to do something about the games and the sale of them to kids, but she's proposed a bill that I've written an op-ed that appeared in the Fort Worth paper is clearly unconstitutional. There's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it, and I told her before she came out with it that her staff asked me to prep her on it, that you can't do this, go this way, and I won't
hold get... That, hold that thought right there. Just... Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and our guest is Mr. Jack Thompson. His book is Out of Harm's Way. And before we go on, how can people get copies of your book?
Well, they can get it anywhere. It's in Borders, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Christian bookstores. They can go online and get it. If you go to Amazon.com, by the way, you'll see that the video gamers who decided to what's called bookstorm the book have given it terrible reviews. There's some nice reviews there, though. Everywhere else, people who read it seem to like it. But you can get it anywhere, and I'm thrilled that Tyndale House has promoted the book and have published it, and it's a mainstream book.
Well, now, of course, the thing is that here in the United States, we limit the ability of children, those less than 18, to buy cigarettes and alcohol. But it's perfectly all right to buy these video games that will train you how to kill, and will certainly sear your very conscience and do away with any concept of morality. And so, of course, Mr. Thompson is trying to get legislation enacted so that certainly in the individual states they can say it is illegal to sell these violent video games. And this is not every video game, but these are specifically designed to promote violence and murder. And that's why, they use these same games on our military. So under any circumstances, why he was commenting that Hillary Clinton has come up, Senator Clinton, of course, wants to become the conservative darling. She's moved to the middle. Now she's no longer the radical she was. She's tried to project a centrist position. She's written legislation. Would you go ahead and tell our listeners again the background of this legislation, this phony legislation that Hillary Clinton has written when, knowing full well that it'll be declared unconstitutional?
Sure. I'd be happy to. Dick Morris calls what she's doing and has done, as Bill Clinton has done for years, triangulation. And what you do is you convince people to your right that you care about an issue, you want to do something. And on the other hand, you're winking at the, those on the left or the industry that you're supposedly regulating. You're saying, don't worry, I'm going to propose something or do something that isn't going to affect you in any fashion whatsoever. And what she's done here is propose a bill that will criminalize the sale of games, violent games, mature games to kids, after she knows that the courts have struck down the approach that she's taking. The approach she's taking is saying you can't sell an M-rated, mature-rated game to a minor. The problem with that is you cannot, and the courts have been consistent on this since the 1930s, you cannot take a private industry standard like the Entertainment Software Rating Board rating of an M game and make that a governmental standard. What you have to do is say, as is done in obscenity, you simply have a jury determine what is harmful material to minors, and you make that the touchstone for the prosecution rather than the government allowing a private sector industry group to define what's harmful and what isn't harmful. So without getting too caught up in the constitutional analysis, she knows, and in fact the courts have struck down bills like this at the state level that have taken the rating system and tried to make it the law that's being make it as if it had the force of law. So she knows full well not only do we have opinions going back to the 1930s, we have federal court rulings that have struck down the approach that she's taking. So it won't work. She knows it won't work. And so she's winking at the industry saying, don't worry, I want to appear to be a friend of children and parents everywhere, but don't worry, video game industry, I won't lay a glove on you.
And, of course, you've actually told her there, or told her staff that?
Yeah, they called me for me to prep her in July of 2005 on this issue. I spent well over an hour doing it. And I was happy to do it. I mean, I'll work with everyone short of Satan, and that might describe her, on this issue, because it's an important one. People are dying because of the copycatting phenomenon of these games. So I was happy to help her, but I did it with my fingers crossed, and I knew, and my legs and my arms crossed, knew that she would somehow mess it up, and probably intentionally, and that's exactly what she did. They asked me specifically what kind of law could we come up with, and I gave them the way to do it. It's basically a three-pronged test that mirrors the Miller test that the courts have found constitutional, and applying that type of standard to violence marketed to kids. I said, that's the only way that will pass constitutional muster. And they said, well, how about making the ratings of the video game industry be the determinant of what's harmful to minors? I said, no, that won't work, and I explained to them why and gave them the cases. And they sure enough, months later, they decided to go that way. So it won't work. She knows it won't work, and it's all a mirror game, and that's why I'm working with the legislators in the states and giving them the constitutional approach that will withstand judicial scrutiny, and eventually a legislator is going to get it right, and then it's going to become the law in those states and hopefully at the federal level too. But Hillary's bill is dead on arrival.
And of course Hillary knows that. That's why she's bringing it forward.
That's why she's doing it.
So she'll get a lot of applause from the conservatives and the Christians, and everybody says, why, she's not such a bad person after all. And I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, she is a bad person. She's a very wicked and evil individual. And, let's not get on into Hillary Clinton.
Well, I do want to quote, I think the greatest thing, if I may, that anyone ever said about Hillary Clinton, Pat Buchanan stood at the podium at the Republican National Convention in 1992. He had been a candidate and an unsuccessful one. And if you remember, Hillary had been quoted as saying that marriage was, as an institution, was akin to slavery. And Pat Buchanan said from the podium, Hillary, speak for yourself.
Well, we've got Roger calling from Pennsylvania. Roger, do you have a question for our guest?
Yes, thank you. I've been desperately wanting to ask. I'd like to be able to say I talked with the attorney on the local talk radio, the attorney that got rid of Howard Stern, and that he fully agrees that the reason for the fines and other trouble attendant to carrying Howard Stern was due to the predictability of his obscenities. But conversely...
Well, what is the question, Roger?
Okay, conversely, you would agree that...
No. Just asking a question. Don't put it like you agree.
No, I want to hear any difference with my statement that just because on what is conservative talk radio, maybe at the rate of once a month you'd have some boorish, ignoramus, utter obscenities, that would, before they click them off, that would not possibly get them in trouble with the FCC. That was sort of out of the talk show host control.
And you're talking about a caller calling in and saying something obscenity.
So those 6-second tape delays could well be to prescribe free speech more than to prevent the obscenity. Disagree at all?
Yeah, I disagree. I'm familiar and have been for 20-some years with talk radio, and typically what gets dumped, as it's called because of the delay, is material that violates congressional and FCC standards. Now, you can have a host who doesn't like where the caller is going and just gets rid of them, that's always going to happen because it's the host show. If I went off on a rampage here and did something that was inappropriate, either illegal or inappropriate, our good host here would have the right to hit the dump button and get rid of me. And I don't have a problem with that. But what I have a problem with is that Howard Stern had spent 20-some years violating the law. And by the way, these are not suggestions. It's not like the Ten Commandments are the Ten Suggestions. It is black-letter law in this country that you cannot air indecent material, and if you do, it's a fine punishable, or it's a crime punishable by 2 years imprisonment. And the real mistake that was made with Stern and Chairman Sensenbrenner from Ohio of the House Judiciary Committee said it, and I agree with them, is that the FCC should have made criminal referrals to the Justice Department, having found administratively that indecency was aired, and they should have prosecuted him criminally and put him in jail. Because it was a criminal act, and I'd love to see Howard doing his show on Sirius from San Quentin in an orange jumpsuit. That's where he ought to be, because he has mentally molested minors for money for 2 decades, airing material that I can't even clinically describe here, that most people don't know that he aired, by virtue of the fact that they have lives and they have their heads in the sand, in some ways in a good way. And don't know what Howard Stern has been doing, but if I told you right now some of the stuff he's aired in violation of the law, you'd be grossed out.
Well, we would simply beep you out if you tried to do that. But
yeah,
I think what's so important, what really is so encouraging to me, is that Cirrus has made this $500 million contract, 5 years, and he's to get $100 million a year. They're having real trouble now. They're having trouble, actually getting those radios and people being willing, first of all, to buy the special radio, secondly, to actually put out the $10 or $12 a month so they can hear the obscenity and filth.
Well, yeah, Mike Savage said it pretty well when asked whether or not this would work, and he said, well, Howard Stern's hardcore listeners basically live in their parents' basement and they don't own cars. and I said on CNBC the other day, I said, I don't think there are enough wealthy perverts in America.
I don't think so.
I think there's an initial interest in it, and they may sell enough to make it work for a while. But the thing is, if you're in a situation where there are basically no rules, then in a way, here's what's going to happen. You're not going to have the cachet and the thrill of people saying, oh, can you believe he said that? What will the FCC do? The FCC is not going to do anything now. But secondly, if you keep pushing the envelope, eventually you run out of stuff to do. And if your intent is to shock, you're either going to run out of things to shock, or you're going to go so far, and I predict this will happen, that Stern will be prosecuted criminally, not for indecency, but for obscenity. And in this country, people are surprised to find you cannot distribute by any means obscene material to adults, whether they pay for it or not. And I think Stern is going to be so desperate a year into this thing to keep outdoing himself that he's going to do stuff that some prosecutor somewhere in Texas or Alabama is going to say, enough already.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to John in California. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Well, pretty well, thank you. I'm interested in, with the satellite service, since it still seems to be broadcasting, why the FCC doesn't have jurisdiction over the content.
What about that, Jack?
It's because there's no statute that gives them jurisdiction over that as to content. They can regulate cable TV, they can regulate satellite, but not as to content. And you have to, and it's an excellent question, but until Congress passes a law that says that the FCC can punish and therefore regulate content as to indecency or whatever, then there's no enabling legislation that gives them that power. Now, there's discussion in Congress about doing that and saying, look, it's so pervasive, cable TV, for example, that we're going to pass laws like that. I think quite honestly, there's a real constitutional problem with that. By virtue of the fact that it's a paid-for service, but I must tell you, as a practical matter, we just went through the year 2005, and there was not a single decency fine, not a single one, levied by the FCC, even though studies showed that the amount of indecent material has doubled since 1998 on broadcast airwaves. So I must say, as a practical matter, if we're not going to do anything about indecency or doing so very little on public airwaves, it's quite a leap to suggest we ought to start regulating more of it, which we won't then regulate at all anyway.
Anything else, John?
Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense. But
it's rather discouraging, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But isn't there at least licensing of the channel assignments and the footprints for those satellites?
There is, but not on the basis of a violation of decency standards, because there are no decency standards. The only thing, and let me modify my answer, because it dovetails into what I said earlier about obscenity. Obscenity is material that is appeals to the prurient interest, which is below the community standard, and that can be a national standard, and as taken as a whole, is without any serious literary, political, scientific, or medical content. And I think what Stern is going to do is air obscene material, which then might result in some kind of consequence federally to the satellite provider, because obscenity is contraband by definition. But I think more likely what you're going to have is some prosecutor in a locale who is in a conservative locale, let's say like Alabama, who will say, look, I've got nothing to lose going after Stern, and besides, it is obscene. And if Howard Stern gets prosecuted for obscenity, I think all sorts of good things will happen.
So he could be subject to state statutes then.
Exactly, because these programs will be downloaded, even though it's by satellite, into a local jurisdiction.
And it's sort of like we can have dry states in the country where you can't have alcohol. Or we can have dry counties, you can't buy alcohol. And if they start downloading his obscenity there, why, the county can take after him if we have people are willing to do it. But the tragedy is, John, that we're gradually eroding the moral of our society, and Alexander Pope had said it so well, that when he wrote, you know, vice is a monster of so frightful mien as to be hated, but to be seen, but seen too oft, too familiar with her face, we first endure, and then pity, and then we embrace. And it's amazing, as I've watched over the last, 70 years, a gradual erosion of the moral standards of this country. It has happened by accident. It's been very intentional, very purposeful. But they're only able to get away with it because the good people are allowing it. And that's what Mr. Thompson is doing. He's taking a stand, and boy, are they concerned about him. He's really having an effect.
Well, I certainly applaud him, and I wish him well, and we need more people like him.
All right.
Well, thank you.
God bless
you. Really appreciate it.
Thanks very much for calling, John.
You're welcome.
All right, fine. Well, of course, are there going to be some lawsuits against the Walmarts and these other stores that are really pushing this sort of thing? What about the people, who were killed, the families of the people who were killed by this young man who was playing this game and was trained to kill the three police officers? What's going to happen there?
Well, in fact, Walmart is a defendant in our case. They moved to dismiss the lawsuit.
Mr. Thompson, can you hear me at all? Mr. Thompson, can you hear me? Well, we seem to have had a problem here, and we're going to see if we can get the thing back going again. Mr. Thompson, can you hear me?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay. I need to ask you how long we're going to go here. I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
All right, go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
You're doing fine. I can hear you fine.
I just need to know how long we're going to go.
We've got about 4 minutes to go.
Okay. Well, I was done, I think, in my response to your question about Walmart.
All right, go ahead. Okay, fine. Well, somebody wanted to know that. Well, we're going to just go to a break here, and then we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, our guest is Mr. Jack Thompson. We're talking about the tragedy of what's going on as far as the corruption of the minds of our youth. And, you know, what sort of response are you getting from people across America? Are they really concerned about what's taking place?
Oh, I think they are. And they have been for quite some time. I think the turning point in all of this was Columbine, because you had a rather remarkable massacre at the hands of kids who were swimming in violent entertainment. In fact, let me paraphrase Peggy Noonan, who wrote 3 days after Columbine in the pages of the Wall Street Journal, quote, "With Columbine, a line was crossed. It was a point at which American parents realized that what we call popular culture is raw sewage in which our children are swimming that is dangerous to their health and to the safety of others." And when you have a generation of kids now, millions of them, for hours at a time, playing murder simulation games in which they're enjoying blowing people's heads off, having sex with prostitutes, killing police, running over innocent people, and grinning while they're doing it, you're doing it. You're basically training a nation of Manchurian candidate children, some of whom are going to be pushed over the edge to the point of doing these things. It's just a numbers game in which these things are going to happen. I think what you have is a split within the American people, those who know that we've got a problem and those who couldn't care less. I think everybody knows we've got a problem, but some people want to do something about it. And it doesn't take that many to change a community and to change an issue. The great people, I forget this lady's name, who started Mothers Against Drunk Driving because of her own personal tragedy in that regard. She's changed the public attitude about drunk driving, whereas before it was a joke and now it's perceived to be a public safety hazard. I'm trying to do in a small way the same thing about the marketing of adult-rated and adult-themed sexual and violent material to kids and others far more adroit and Bright and I have done the same thing, and so together I think we are making a difference. I think it does take more to maybe get to the tipping point where we actually accomplish as much as we need to accomplish, but I think we're headed in the right direction.
And I think we are too, and I really want to thank you personally for what you're doing. I wish I could be out there, but I'm not a lawyer.
Oh, you're out there.
Anyway, God bless you for what you're doing. And,
thank you,
and
Doc.
We look forward to having you on our evening program here in the not-too-distant future. God bless you. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Mr. Jack Thompson. Well, that was Mr. Jack Thompson in an excellent, excellent book, and we certainly recommend it. It's called Out of Harm's Way, and you can get it certainly at your bookstore, at Amazon.com, Borders. And one person can really make a difference, and this is our message to you. If you really care about what's happening, if you care about your future, about your family, about your freedom, you're going to have to be involved because there really are wicked people out there. And simply this effort to corrupt our children is simply one aspect of the whole effort to destroy the moral fabric of our society. It is not happening by accident. It is happening by intent. And it is being encouraged by wicked people within our court system, but we still have the structure of a court system, and we still have the vast majority of the American people who believe in God, and the vast majority consider themselves to believe in Jesus Christ. And if you look at the latest polls, you'd be surprised to find out how many good people we have, despite the fact that they've controlled the media and they've controlled our educational system for the last 50 years. There's an inherent goodness in people. Now, admittedly, we're all sinners, but most people know that there's something that's seriously wrong. They just don't understand that we are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. There are secret societies. There are people working at the highest levels of our government, promoting wars, promoting violence, promoting all of these vile things. A lot of them are working in Hollywood, which is intent upon destroying Christianity. And, in fact, we have a great video. We're going to be interviewing Carol Matriciana this evening on our program. And, of course, she gets into the gods of entertainment and what Hollywood is really doing. And you can get Carol Matriciana's excellent video, The Gods of Entertainment, from Radio Liberty by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We do hope that many of you will actually go ahead and get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which gives you the best overview of what's going on. And you can get the book by itself or along with the video and the audio tape of the Brotherhood of Darkness special. You need to get our four-tape set on secret societies and our four-tape set on the secret government, or the secret government special, which is actually about 8 hours of video and about two four-tape sets. That'll keep you busy for a good while, and you'll know more than most college professors do. If you want to get into the background of the secret society that controls America, you need to read Professor Quigley's book. He was Bill Clinton's mentor. Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. You can get that by itself or with the Tragedy and Hope special. The Tragedy and Hope special, which includes the interview with Professor Quigley, and, of course, the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence, because most of this has been financed by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Ford Foundation and the Carnegie Foundation, and many of our other great tax-exempt foundations have been set up by people who have gone over to the dark side and have accumulated great wealth and great prosperity. But they've done it by selling their souls to the devil. And, of course, if you would like to get what I think is one of our best means of communicating this message, the videos, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version of They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, and you'll hear the people within the music industry talking about selling their souls. Oh, that sounds just so foolish. That couldn't happen in real life. Ladies and gentlemen, it not only could happen, it is happening. They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then seriously think about joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day. And if you'd like to hear us, of course, 9 hours a day, you can get on to Telstar a 5, and we'll be there 9 hours a day. Of course, a lot of it will be rebroadcast. We'll be there along with Joyce Riley, along with Pastor Chuck Chrismeyer, along with Pastor Bush Paul. And your job is to get other people to listen to our programs, whether it be on radio, whether it be on shortwave, whether it be on satellite, whether it be on the internet. You can get us there 5 hours a day at www.radioliberty.com. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, because if this country doesn't turn back to God, why, we're going to lose America. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.